Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you. Help, I need
somebody. Help. You're listening to an encore presentation of Real Recovery.
You better believe it's time for Real Recovery. So glad that you're with us tonight. Bill Arnold on this side of the studio, and at his home studio facing the lake, I believe, is George P. Fraser, a man who once arrived at his vacation destination and departed it on probation. I don't know how you pulled that off, George.
Well, it's a gift, Bill.
It is a gift.
And glad to be here tonight.
Yeah, we've got Troy Chamness as our guest. He's got a great story. He's going to be with us in just a couple of minutes. But until then, George, I just want to welcome everyone who's listening tonight to Real Recovery. And if you are in recovery or if you are searching for recovery, I want you to know you're looking for Jesus. And I want you to find recovery. George and I are want to let you know that we love you, we care about you, and we want to find you in a place where you can get the help you need. And there's a lot of places to do that, George.
Yeah, Billy, great intro. And I think the important thing for us to emphasize is when you stop your behavior, if it's drinking, drugging, gambling, sex, whatever, you're going to find that you've just stopped your problem, that you stay in the same place that you are. You don't get in as much trouble. But there's something missing. And that's Jesus. He created you to have a relationship with him. And if you don't have it, you're leaving the best part of recovery on the table.
Mm-hmm. In Psalm chapter 18, verse 2, it says, "The Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer, my God, my rock in whom I take refuge, my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold." I love that verse. I think we're going to talk tonight, George, about step two. I think this ties in really nicely.
It does. Came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. I think we need to start with sanity, Bill. I really feel like a hypocrite. How can I talk about sanity? Do you have anything on this subject?
No, I want you to talk about it.
I believe sanity is living and acting upon the truth, okay? And insanity is believing a lie and living accordingly. That's simple. You know, we've all heard insanity is doing the same behavior and expecting a different result. My favorite of all time is, I know this isn't going to work, but I'm going to do it anyway. To me, that's the using insanity. But Jesus said, I am the way, I'm the truth, I'm the life. No one comes to the Father except through the Son. And so what it really breaks down to is I can change all my habits, go to a bunch of self-improvement courses, which I would never do because that requires some work and commitment to things I try to avoid. But you're still you. The only way to change who you are is to have God do it. And that's only through Christ. We're transformed by Christ, by obeying what he says. So you got to get in the word, you got to get around believers, and you pray. We spend very little time in the totality talking about recovery, about prayer, Bill. And I always start my day with the prayer, God, give me the power, strength, and desire to stay sober today. Because I need all of that. I need the desire to do it. But there's third step prayer, seventh step prayer. There's a lot of prayers we get into on another program. But what we're realizing here, when you come in with a problem, you admit that you're powerless, that your life's unmanageable. That's step one. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity is the Holy Spirit not only convicting you that you have a problem in step one, but showing you there's a way out. So you get two gifts in one here, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to get convicted and then have hope that it will change for you to get into action, I believe. And a lot of people don't believe in God. That's a problem. And the Big Blue Recovery book talks about our ways not working. We really don't know. we became alcoholics because we got crushed by self-imposed crises that we caused, and we can't postpone or evade them. So you have to look fearlessly about the proposition of God, and what it says in the book is God is either everything or he's nothing. Make any sense?
Oh yeah, he's all loving, he's all powerful, and God says you must die to yourself. And I think there's where the rub is for a lot of people. They don't want to quite go there, where they say I'm going to die to myself.
Yeah, or we make a confession of faith and then hold on to a lot of things. Like, I'm not willing to give that up.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, God couldn't want me to do that. That must be a translation error in the old manuscripts, right? But you want to keep moving forward, as Paul talks about in Philippians, about pressing on towards the goal. One of the things that I think you can evidence in your own life, I could have said that better, see the evidence in your own life, is... You ever think about why all of a sudden you want to quit? That you're willing to give it a try if you're there? I mean, other people in your life thought you should quit years ago, but not us. We'll just crank it up a little. I believe that's the Holy Spirit drawing you in, mm-hmm. you know, saying to you, we got away. This is going to be better, because I really cannot come up for any other explanation, Bill, why people all of a sudden something happens when it should have happened years ago, and now they're willing to do what it takes. And if you want to try it, if you're thinking about going to rehab or, you know, going to talk to your pastor to pray with you about quitting using, God's drawing you in. And I say that because it's true, but I also say it to encourage you, because if God is for us, who can be against us? I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. You're on the way. And a lot of us, Bill, look in the rearview mirror and go, why did I all of a sudden want to do that before everybody else wanted me to do that? And why did I have a hunger to really look on whether there was a God or not? That all comes from God.
Mm-hmm. George, when you're making that step and you're going to start saying no, I think we just have to admit how incredibly hard it is. I mean, it's going to be hard if you're going to make the right choices, and it's going to be hard if you don't make the right choices. It's going to be hard either way. Fair?
Well, no, that's exactly right, Bill. And you're in what you call a double bind. All options to you are not something you would choose. And that's really a blessing from God that you realize that. Some people go to their graves not realizing it. That they'll just bad luck and circumstance rather than their own responsibility for their poor choices. So this is a blessing. It's hard work. If this was easy, you would have done it years ago. But the change here is there's a part of you that thinks maybe this will work. And that's God. That's an opening. You're not dead in your heart completely. You know, we're seeing a spark of life here, Bill. I think the worst thing about my addiction was a total loss of hope. Total loss of hope. Mm-hmm. And I think for a lot of the guys that we work with at the Salvation Army, we offer the true hope, and that's Jesus Christ. And for a lot of guys, the light comes on when they realize, I can't change this. And if you're thinking you can't, you're right. But God can and will if he's asked.
George, how does the pride and unbelief fit into all this too?
Well, we're our own God. And the pride, a lot of addicts like myself, we're an egomaniac with an inferiority complex. We really think we're better, but we know we're not, because we don't have the game to do it. And we vacillate back and forth, and in moments of repentance, I'll do whatever it takes. You got to make a decision you're going to stop. And then you have to follow through. It's not a mental, I'm going to stop for 500, Alec. You've got to take an action.
Mm-hmm.
Go to rehab. Talk to your pastor. Tell your family. You got in the old days of the United States, when they went out west, they drove stakes for land claims. You got to drive some stakes in your recovery that this is what I want to do. So that when you think about using, you go, well, I told my family I wouldn't use. I told God. I told my pastor. You got to take ownership in your recovery, and you got to move forward. And part of that is taking action. And hopefully your willingness is you will do whatever comes up. When you hear yourself say, you know, I'm not willing to do that, I'm saying I'm not willing to follow God completely, and I'm not willing to do whatever it takes to stay sober.
Yeah, well, that's and a hard truth.
It kept me in and out of the recovery for 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
The only time I say I got it was when I was playing baseball, you know? I got it because when I say I got it,
yeah,
you can bet against it. My dad used to say, when George said, no problem, it was a huge one.
Yeah.
So.
All right. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to bring on our special guest, Troy. We're looking forward to hearing his story tonight. You're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George. We'll be right back.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Real Recovery.
All right, welcome back to Real Recovery. So glad you joined us tonight. We're looking forward to hearing from Troy, our special guest tonight. George, looking forward to this story.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Troy is in studio, and George, of course, just to remind everyone, he is at his home studio with his chair facing the lake, even though he's sitting on the couch looking at the wall. I don't know why you do what you do, George.
I have my sound man Bob here, so we're good to go, Billy.
And of course, Bob's your dog. So let's meet Troy. Troy, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me on, guys.
Of course.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, we're dying to hear your story. We want to know all about you and where you grew up. I think you were in Chicago, weren't you?
Yep, about 40 miles northwest of Chicago in a town called Algonquin. Back when I was a kid, there was 1,600 people. Now it's about 30,000 people there.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty standard sort of family upbringing. Mom and dad go to church on Sunday, anything like that?
Yeah, pretty much. We, it was a fairly normal family. I have one older sister, 2 years older than me. And when I was young, we did go to church. And my problem with church was that it bored the heck out of me when mm-hmm. I was a kid.
Do you have a short attention span?
Yeah, basically. Mm-hmm. And we, now looking back on it, we had a great preacher. He really brought the messages. They had a Dixieland band that would play there
nice.
Once every couple of months. It was awesome.
Cool.
But I just didn't listen. I didn't pay attention. Nowadays I look back and I regret that a bit because this guy, Gary Miller was his name, in Algonquin there, and it was just awesome. So, and I didn't pay attention. I didn't listen. I went through the confirmation deal and just never got it. Never got the Jesus thing, I guess you would say, or the God thing at the time, and just went out on my own and did my own thing.
Mm-hmm. So what happened in high school? Did you start to do a little bit of experimentation?
Yeah, you could say that, yeah.
Was it in the marijuana department?
Yeah, it was. It was. Things started happening for me when I was about 13 or 14, all right around the same time. We had a snow day, and my sister, her best friend, and myself were at the house, and we had some Jack Daniels that we found in the cabinet, and we were off to the races drinking out of these little round glass bears glasses, you know? And it was just amazing how the stuff made me feel. It really made me feel like Superman. And I remember the feeling that I had after I gotten sick and threw up and the whole nine yards. I wanted to feel like that again.
Hmm.
And I was going to chase that. And later on, a little bit after that, the same best friend of my sister, she had a brother who used a lot of marijuana. And we got some off a tray in his basement, and we were off to the races on that. And I remember standing at the bus stop and being so paranoid of just somebody coming up behind me, or was the bus going to run me over, or something like that. So I really didn't like that very much.
Because you were high, or because you had a marijuana on you, or both?
Well, both.
Okay.
The first thing was that I was high, and the second thing was I think I had a little bit on me, but I'm not sure. I don't remember that well, but I still remember being so paranoid from that stuff. But after that, I continued to do it, and the paranoia went away, and it was just chasing that feeling all the time, chasing the buzz and things like that. And then the other thing that happened to me was one day I'm in my parents' room, and I'm going through their closet like I shouldn't have been doing, and I found a magazine. And this magazine had, you know, nasty pictures of people doing things in it was a pornography magazine, basically. And they sold products and things of that nature in this magazine. And that started that ball rolling for me as well. So I would try to get my hands on anything related with that for a long time. So right around freshman year of high school, or maybe a little bit before that, all three of those things started to roll for me.
Okay. George, does this surprise you at all?
No, it's really interesting. And what happens is the first time for most alcoholics and addicts that we get the feeling, it's life-changing. For a lot of people, it's the first time they feel okay in their life, that they really feel connected. For other people, it's better than anything they've ever had. And I think most of us can remember the first time, that warm feeling, that peace. It's fabulous. And it is.
I couldn't agree more.
It's life-changing. Life-changing.
It was for me. I still remember as a kid, my dad, and he's a great guy, and he's done a lot for me. He was a little bit abusive and things of that nature, but he's never complimented me, ever. I hit four home runs in a baseball game, and he asked me why I made an error at first base. And, yeah, it was crazy how he never complimented me. And I would try to say, hey, Dad, did I do a good job and all this? And he wouldn't say a word. But then the alcohol, the drugs made me feel like I was there, like I had done something good. And it made me forget about all of that other stuff and just gave me that, like George was talking about, that warm, fuzzy sensation of, there's nothing wrong. Everything is fine. Everything's great. And it was just, it was an amazing thing. I really remember that.
You were getting a little affirmation, weren't you?
Yeah.
From the drugs and the alcohol.
Absolutely.
Interesting.
Yep. And they said they say if you remember your first drunk or your first buzz or whatever, then you're in the club. You're an alcoholic. You're an addict. And I do. I definitely remember both of those things.
Yeah. I think there was a generation of dads that if they gave you a compliment, they figured it would be real detrimental to your, outcome. And having to be better than the other guys and all that. A lot of people find a real release in their partying buddies, and they feel accepted. And when you use, you feel great. And you talked about once you had that, you sought it out. And that's when the problem really accelerates.
George, did you have that issue with your dad? Was he able to give you the kind of the positive affirmations, or did he say, boy, you missed a play at first base?
My dad, was always, you have to be better than the other guys. And then, you know me, Bill, I don't listen. So that was a real good coping mechanism. But I think, that can kind of be it. I think they send dads to a special school for that. And I think for a lot of us, we're gonna look to where we feel accepted, and that can be using, and with your using buddies, right?
Yeah, and we're not beating up dads by any means. We're just saying there's men that have the ability to affirm their kids in a very genuine way, and others, maybe they never received the affirmation themselves, and they have a hard time giving it.
Yeah, and his stepdad, my grandfather, he was one of those who was very complimentary. He would always tell me, good job. We'd play sports in the yard, something me and my father never did. So my grandpa, completely different guy from what my father is. And it's just, that's the way it was. My mother, same way, very complimentary, would always give me, ice cream, rewards, whatever, when I did something well. So that was just, it's just the way people are. It took me a long time to get over that from my dad. George could probably speak on this too, but it took me a long time and a lot of work to get through that and to realize that that's just how he is. And I'm not going to be able to change him. Only God can change people like that.
Mm-hmm. That's a real lead in for me. My dad, I did not get shortchanged on my dad. I got a great dad, but he was a better friend when I got older than he was a dad. and a little too harsh on things. And my, you know, my dad never beat me up. I tried to do that to him once. It didn't work too well when I was in high school. But he did help me get sober because he held me accountable later. But you know what? People do the best they can. And if we start blaming other people for what we're doing, that's a mistake. As you learn, you go, hey, they did the best they could. I never suffered for wanting anything. And I knew my dad loved me. But yeah, he was tough on me.
And George and Troy, when I'm thinking of the story, Troy, is the critical years when you're 13, 14, and you're trying to transition from being a young boy to an older boy into a young man, and you're kind of transitioning into adolescence and adulthood. If you're doing it on your own or doing it with other friends that are sharing marijuana and booze with you, you're off doing it by yourself.
Yeah, I was. That was my existence. After I began to use and began to drink and the pornography, it was all on my own because there was a little bit of shame in the back of my head, for especially for the pornography. But for the drinking and drugging, it was kind of the same way. From when I was 14 to when I was about 18, it just started to ramp up a little here and a little there. I would go to a friend's house on the weekends and get drunk. And then when I was 18 to when I was about 30, I smoked pot every single day, just about every single day. The only time I didn't is when I didn't have any money or ran out of weed, and we would like scrape the pipes and do the whole thing with that. And it was just a really desperate situation. And looking back on that, it was so much wasted time in my life of waking up every morning instead of being grateful and thankful like I am now. It was a matter of how am I going to get high today? How am I going to get drunk? What's going to happen?
How many activities did you give up to use?
I had a pretty promising baseball career, George. I could have been maybe a major leaguer if I'd have worked really hard at it and tried. My coach in high school said I hit one that would have been over the roof at Comiskey, the old Comiskey. So I was a left-handed batter, right-handed thrower. So I gave that up. I gave up any chance that I would ever have a relationship with a woman after I was 18 years old, because who would want to go out with a loser like me? That was my mentality. And the thing that I started doing is living a D-minus lifestyle, just barely getting by. I had a 2.3 grade point average in high school. My relationships with my parents, with my grandparents, terrible. I was stealing from them to get what I wanted, and I would stop at really nothing to get what I wanted. I never went to jail, never committed Grand Theft Auto or any stuff like that, but I would take change. I would take jewelry and all that sort of stuff. So I did give up a lot for my drug addiction, my alcoholism. It was kind of like giving up my soul, but it took from when I was 18 to when I was about 35, just a slow process of doing that. So,
okay, we've got a great redemptive story coming. We're going to take a little break. You're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George. We've got Troy as our special guest. We'll be right back.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Real Recovery.
Welcome back to Real Recovery. Bill and George. Got Ryan on the board tonight doing a fantastic job as always. And our special guest is Troy. George, quite a story we've heard so far.
Excellent. I have a question for you, Troy, that when you start out and you get that buzz and then you seek it out, did you progress to other drugs to get a better buzz? Because we kind of get used to the one we have and we want something better. Did that happen to you?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I progressed from when I was, 18, 19, 20, going to my friend's house, getting drunk most weekends. Then it started to happen most weekends to, let's get like mushrooms and acid. I once had an acid trip that took 5 days. I took one hit of acid, 5-day trip, and going to work like that and all that. That was just one of the scariest times of my life. But yeah, it did progress from, acid, mushrooms, cocaine, started using a little bit of crack here and there. But as I progressed into my mid-20s, it started just to be marijuana and booze because I was getting pretty tired by then. You know, it was an everyday thing for so long that my body started to get tired, my mind started to get tired. But yeah, it definitely did progress. And thank the Lord I didn't get into like heroin or crystal meth or anything like that. I guess you'd call them the really hard drugs. But yeah, it definitely progressed, Bill, because it became the answer for everything. Drugs, alcohol, pornography. It became the answer to everything. If I had a headache, just do some, you know, smoke some grass. If I had a stomach ache, oh, drink will satisfy you. Or if I'm depressed or if I'm anxious, well, maybe watching a little pornography will take care of you. Mm. So it became where that stuff was the answer to all of my problems. And I began to steal from my parents, my grandparents, things like that, to satisfy my cravings, what I wanted. I wanted what I wanted when I wanted it. And I would do a lot of different things that I was ashamed of at the time, of course, in order to do that.
You say you avoided the hard stuff, but a 5-day trip on acid sounds like the hard stuff to me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, but I'm talking the killers, you would call them. So, yeah, we talked about it before the broadcast. It's just the killers, the heroin, sure, and the crystal meth that we hear so much, the fentanyl. It's just the craziness that's happening out there today, and I thank Jesus that I'm not a part of that.
Yeah, yeah. So, Troy.
Billy,
yeah, go ahead, George.
I was going to pick up on that point, too. And I think for a lot of us, we still have standards even when we're addicted. I know for me, I never did needles. You know, that's what an addict did. And when we look back on it, and you did acid and you're smoking crack, and thank God you didn't do heroin or meth. I never did either. But we're still gone. And what started out as a pleasure is now ruining my life. Were you able to work?
No. For quite a while, when I was about 18 to about 23 or 24, I did not like working at all. So I did what I needed to do in order to get, you know, what I wanted. But after that, I finally exhausted all the supplies from my parents and my grandparents and all that. My grandparents used to keep $100 bills in the freezer, and I'd take one once in a while. I don't know why they kept them in the freezer, cold, hard cash, not sure. But once in a while, I would just help myself to that, and then they started getting wind of it and started taking those out of the freezer. So I did end up getting one good job as a conveyor mechanic, and there was a lot of traveling involved. So we'd get to the hotel in a different city, and it would be after work, whose room are we going to? And there was drinking, and there was drugs, and there was all sorts of things going on. And that's how my life was for 7 years, probably when I was 25 to about 32 years old. And I finally got out of that and got a job doing conveyors for Siemens. I was putting together, or not conveyors, I'm sorry, windmills for Siemens, putting together windmills for them. And just the drinking and the drugging continued all through my life. And a couple of significant things happened to me. When I was on my first road job for the conveyor company, and my grandfather was killed in a car accident, and driving home from Indianapolis, just getting bombed. I'm driving and smoking weed at the same time, just getting bombed and not wanting to think about it. And that's one thing that definitely ramped my drug use up, my alcohol abuse, because I was so tight with this guy, and it was just, bam, in the blink of an eye, he's gone. And that really hurt. And then the second thing was, back in 2011, my mom died of cancer, and it took 6 weeks to take her. And she was diagnosed in January and died on March 9th. So it was crazy how fast that this disease made my mom deteriorate, and there was nothing I could do about it. I had absolutely no control over what was happening, and that really hurt too, because I was a person who liked to control things. And that was one thing that I definitely couldn't control. So for that last 9 months from when my mom died to when I finally got sober in December of 2011 was just, it was a blur. I don't hardly remember any of that.
How did she get sober?
Well, I always told myself, and you talked about, we tell ourselves things and we make promises to ourselves, stuff like that. And I, one of mine, it was funny. I didn't drink after before noon because I wasn't an alcoholic. But anyways, just throw that in there. So shortly before the date I got sober, December 7th, 2011, I decided I was going to quit. That was it. No more drugs, no more drinking. That's it. I'm done. So I was off to the races at that, and the DTs hit me. Because as you know, George, and you probably know too, Bill, when your body doesn't get the alcohol that it's been getting for X amount of years, it freaks out on you. So I'm hearing voices in my head, arguing voices, one saying, no, you're not going to quit. The other saying, yes, you're going to quit. You're going to be fine. Everything's going to be great. And I went to work like this for 2 days. So I couldn't stand it anymore. So what did I do? I went and bought some alcohol to cure my ills, bought some marijuana to cure the ills, to knock the voices out. Well, what happened was the voices got louder. And this time it was just the bad voice in my head. So I can say angel on one shoulder, devil on the other, but devil took over. And it was saying things like, you're worthless, you're no good, you should kill yourself. And I was arguing with the voices out loud. I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. What are you talking about? And it was just the craziest thing I ever experienced in my life. I've never heard that since. And I never heard that before this day. This is December 7th now. I'm looking in the basement and I find some extension cord. And I'm like, well, can I do that? Can I hang myself with some extension cord? Like, no, that would hurt too much. And another thing I'm thankful of, thank the Lord, that I'm not a gun owner. Because I probably would have shot myself. So what happened was I finally sat down on my computer and I searched for recovery center, for detox. And I finally found a place in Hoffman Estates. And I had my dad drive me there. And he didn't have any clue how bad I was into this stuff. He was kind of freaked out about this. And we're driving down the road and I'm apologizing to him over and over. I'm crying and feeling remorseful. And we get to the place and we're sitting in the waiting room for what seemed like forever. And my dad finally, he left. So I'm sitting there on my own and looking at staring at the floor, and there's this little kid in there. And this is where this thing brought me to, is I'm thinking about inflicting bodily harm on this young man, this kid. I'm thinking about killing this kid. And for people who know me, I'm not a violent person. So that was one of the scariest things. So I just sat there, stared at the floor forever until the kid finally left. And then I think it was about midnight or 1 a.m. they finally got me in and found a bed for me. So here's the really, really, really God part of this thing is they're waiting to search me because I was suicidal and I told them that. I was getting honest here. So they sat me in this little room, made me strip down to my underwear. And this gentleman comes in, and I know you guys are familiar with what Bill Russell looks like, big black guy. So this guy looks like Bill Russell. He comes in, and he's looking me over, and he says, well, do you know why you're here? And I said, yeah, I'm here because I'm a drug addict, I'm an alcoholic, I'm this, I'm that, and I'm going on and on. He finally interrupts me. He goes, no, you're here because God wants you here. And he went on to tell me about how God had saved me, and he asked me if there were any situations where I could have or should have been dead. And I was like, yeah, 2 DUIs, fell out of a tree from 17 feet in the air, and I walked away. There were a lot of times where I could have and should have been a dead man, and I wasn't. And it was because God saved me. And this guy pointed that out to me. So number one, I'm surrendering, step one. Step two, I spent 5 days in detox thinking that maybe God could help me. And that's step two right there. So that's how I got sober, and then subsequently went to 8 weeks of treatment, outpatient treatment. I was able to go back to work and get back into sort of a normal lifestyle, get back into the swing of things, and went to treatment 4 days a week. And then after that, got into the 12-step deal, and from there, the rest is history. But that was just, it was just, God has been there for me, man, and he's always going to be there for me. And this was just a wake-up call to realize that.
Bill, I love that.
I do.
And I love the counselor talking about that. You know, it's interesting. You said you never drink before noon. And I remember telling a friend of mine, you know, I don't have a problem. I don't drink before noon. And he said, that's because you're not up yet. And that was actually very true. But it's interesting how we deceive ourselves and rationalize that what we're doing is okay.
Yeah.
And really interesting. And God really intervened for you to get an intake guy like that. That's beautiful.
Yeah. And one of the other things I forgot to mention is I'm outside on the little patio we have out in back of my dad's house. And I have a pipe in one hand and a lighter in the other. And I was drinking and I'm hearing these voices. And I just had, I came to this realization, George, that if I take another hit of this or if I take one more drink, I'm dead. I'm dead. That's it. It's over. There's no more, no more. That's it. So that was an awesome realization looking back on it. Now it was crap then, but now it's a great thing that happened to me that God gave me that realization because I was totally ready to just, you know, give up and end it all. So that's when I went back inside and started looking for detox centers. And because a boss of mine had advised me to do that, I called my old boss from Siemens, and he had told me, find a detox now because this thing can kill you. DTs from alcohol can kill you. For all those who don't know that out there, alcoholism, DTs will kill you.
Yep.
So you can't just quit on a dime. No cold turkey.
Billy, we had a previous guest where God told them that if they did that line of coke, they would never get sober and die. And it was your friend that was the bass player.
Yeah. Yeah, Rick Kua. Yeah, quite a story, as is this story. I can't wait to hear of how the Lord has, again, continued to keep Troy on the right path and what God has given him to do in terms of work and sharing his hope and faith with others. You're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George. We've got Troy in our studio today telling his amazing story. We'll take a short break, and we'll be, I promise, right back.
Listening to an encore presentation of Real Recovery.
All right, we're back. Real Recovery, Bill and George. Troy's our special guest tonight. We're hearing quite a story. So, Troy, you've been sober now 10 years. Tell us about your walk with the Lord.
Okay, well, it's something else. It's totally God. Like I said, I started going to the 12-step recovery meetings and got some time under my belt, started doing service work, being a treasurer, doing running meetings, the whole nine yards. And for my 40th birthday, I'm a little over a year sober now, huge 40th birthday party with a bunch of friends. There were 17 people there. There's cake, pizza, ice cream. It was just, it was probably, and people say this like kidding around, the best birthday ever.
Mm-hmm.
It really was the best birthday ever because my birthday's on January 26th. I got sober on December 7th. And my first birthday was not that great. But this one was fantastic. And I received two gifts. One of them was The Purpose-Driven Life by, I can't remember
Rick
the
Warren.
Author, Rick Warren. Thank you very much. And the other one, I received the prior Thanksgiving from a great uncle of mine, and that's Basic Christianity, the book Basic Christianity. Easy read, about 200 pages.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody wants to know the basics of it and all the stuff about Jesus, whether, you know, all the contradictions behind whether he was resurrected or not, read that book. John Stott is the author of that book. So I got those two gifts, and I sat on them for a little bit, didn't read them. Finally, in April of that year, the following of the year of my 40th birthday, that would be 2013, I read both of those books, and subsequently there's a part in both of those where you give your life to Christ. So I did it in both books. This was nothing spectacular. It wasn't a light shining down from heaven or anything like that. For me, I would call it a learning discovery of who Jesus is and what he's done in my life. So after that, I began to go to church at Willow Creek Church. And
in Chicago?
Yep, in Chicago there, Barrington Hills.
Yeah, I know it.
Yep, and it was an amazing place to go. And I would post on Facebook that I'm going and somebody meet me there. And nobody ever met me there, but you know what? I'm going by myself. I'm going to chase this thing with Jesus and see what goes on. So I started doing that and didn't like the music at first. I was, you know, it, but a friend of mine, again, same friends who gave me Purpose Driven Life, sent me a song by For King and Country, and that helped me to fall in love with the music. And the music on KTIS is just, it's amazing stuff, and it really gets me going. So that was part of how my walk began. But from here on out, I was going to a church called Lamplighter, and that closed down, and I started going to a church called Heartland Bible Church. And the pastor there, Pastor Rod, really great guy, brought me to lunch and sat me down and wanted to know if I wanted to preach a sermon in his place. And this was something that I really never thought about. I would see the pastors up there doing their thing, and I was like, well, I'll never do any of that. But then I think back in the past and watching my friend speak at a 12-step function and telling myself back then that I'll never get up in front of 200 people and speak. Well, I got up in front of that crowd three times. I mean, the Lord has just brought me into doing so many things that I never, ever thought was possible for me. Speaking in front of crowds, leading meetings, being a DCM, just doing the volunteer work, sponsoring men and having a couple of men. I got one with 9 years and one's coming up on 9 years. I mean, it's just been an amazing run for a guy who never thought he could do anything. So, I told the pastor, yes, I'll definitely do that. Well, I've done that three times, and coming down to it, I started taking some classes for Christian Leaders Institute. They're free classes, and now the goal is, the long-term goal for me, and it's going to be a little while, good Lord willing, and the crick don't rise, that I'll be a pastor one day. Fantastic. So that's where the walk has taken me, just through the 12-step program, and I'm not calling the 12-step program a stepping stone or anything like that, but it was a beautiful start for me to get in touch with God and to start praying and to start doing some spiritual things and just to work my way up to where I am today. And I'm just one more exam away from getting a basic ministry certificate, and that's just the beginning for
me. Now, the recovery groups, the 12-step groups, you've been a part of that ever since you got into recovery.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Probably about 8 weeks after when I was doing the treatment,
mm-hmm.
they strongly suggest a 12-step program, and I was lying about it. I was lying about a sponsor. I was lying about going to meetings, and I never went to any meetings and said a sponsor. I had a sponsor named John, and later on I did have a sponsor named Johnny, so that was kind of ironic. But the counselor pulled me in the office, and he knew. He's a smart guy, this counselor. And he said, well, why don't you come to the Saturday morning meeting here at the hospital and see how you like it? So I went to that meeting and went into a first step meeting where everybody goes around the room, and these guys didn't tell me about how many DUIs they had. They didn't tell me about how many treatment centers they were in. They told me how their lives had gotten better as a result of the 12 steps. That's what they told me. So they went around the room and they did all that and gave me all sorts of inspiration. It was awesome. So I got up and I went up to one gentleman in particular and asked him if he'd be my sponsor. And he said, yeah, sure, kid, I'll be your sponsor. Are you done? And I looked at him, and I started, like, chuckling a little bit because I thought he was kidding around. He goes, no, look at me. I looked him in the face. He says, are you done? I said, yeah. I looked him right in the eye, and I said, yeah, I'm done.
Done using?
Done using, mm-hmm. done drinking. That's what he meant. Are you done? Done doing the things that you're doing. Done, you know, making your family angry, upsetting your family. Are you done stealing from them? Are you just done doing the things that you were normally doing? Are you ready to repent, which means turn the other way and do the things that sober people do? And I told him yes. So I made a promise to him, and I made a promise to myself. And it snowballed from there, and I went to meetings probably 6 days a week for 2 years and really got into it. Like I said, I'm sitting in a meeting, and the old treasurer's leaving, and a guy in front of me said, yeah, T-Roy will be the treasurer. I'm like, sure, okay, I'll be the treasurer. So I got talked into being a treasurer for a meeting. And it went on from there where I was GSR of a meeting, and then finally later on, the last 3 years up until January of this year, 2021, I was a DCM for 3 years and did my stint in that.
Yeah, this is all bells and whistles to me. Sorry.
Yeah, it's a district committee member.
Okay.
And basically I run the monthly meetings for the district, for the 12-step district that I was in, District 13 in Hoffman Estates, Schaumburg, Illinois.
Nice. Okay.
So, yep. And there's 19 different districts in the Chicagoland area, and I was DCM, district committee member, of one of them.
Nice.
So, yeah, it was a job that I probably wouldn't do again. but it's okay. It was, I learned quite a bit, and I would definitely help a guy who would ask me to be a DCM. I would definitely help them get on the road to doing that. Yeah. So I definitely learned a lot.
So George, I have a question.
You were willing to do it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you were asked and you did it.
Basically,
and that's what's important.
George, I have a question for you. When this gentleman asked Troy if he was done, did you know right away what that question meant?
Yeah, it basically talks about in the blue book that idea that we're going to return to drinking like a normal person must be smashed.
And age 30.
Are you serious, kid? You know? And I love that. But what I was thinking, guys, you had the person at the intake. You have this guy that comes to the hospital that's part of the meeting. And they both ask you a question. Do you know why you're here?
Hmm.
You know, and God brought you here, I think. And then are you done? And it's really interesting to me. You can't tell me that's not God, you know, with some flesh on him.
And you know what I love about these questions, Bill and Troy, is they're incredibly simple questions.
Yep. Simple questions for complicated people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I needed at that time. Everything that happened to me, because Johnny O was my first sponsor, and he was a hard guy. If I didn't make a meeting, he'd be calling. What's going on? You sick? You know, so it was what I needed at that time. And it was just, I think back on it, and there's nothing else that it could have been. It was completely God. It was just, what a blessed man I am. I know that.
Troy, I would love for you to speak to people who have tuned in tonight that may be in a situation where they're not done and they're feeling a little bit anxious or tempted, and you've gone, you're walking through this journey of recovery and 10 years sober. What would you say to those
man,
dear souls listening tonight?
Yeah. First thing I do is I pray for all of you. You know, I pray for the alcoholics and addicts who are still out there doing their thing. And just to tell you, there's a better life, and I've been living it. And I tell a lot of people this in meetings and just, you know, in conversation about alcoholism and drug addiction, that I never thought my life would be this good. And I know you're out there today, wherever you're at, and you don't think your life can be as good as mine or as good as George's, who has 36 years. You don't think it can be that good, but it can. It's amazing. It just takes a lot of surrender. It definitely takes a lot of surrender, because each step in the 12-step recovery program involves surrender. So that would be my biggest thing, is surrender to the fact that you are what you are. So, and I want to just take it out with a Bible verse here. These are my Bible verses. These are my life verses. And I pray this for everybody out there who's struggling. It's Ephesians 3:14-21. It's Paul's prayer to the Ephesians. And I want to pray this for you guys right now. For this reason, I bow my knees before the Father, from whom every family in heaven and on earth is named, that according to the riches of his glory, he may grant you to be strengthened with power through his Spirit in your inner being, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith, that you, being rooted and grounded in love, may have strength to comprehend with all the saints what is the breadth and length and height and depth, and to know the love of Christ that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled with all the fullness of God. Now to him who is able to do far more abundantly than all we ask or think, according to the power at work within us, to him be the glory in the church and in all Christ and in Christ Jesus through all generations, forever and ever. Amen.
Wow. Troy, solid finish.
Thank you, my friend.
George, I don't think we touched that, do we?
No. Thanks, Troy.
Yeah, it's been wonderful.
George.
Quite a story. Quite a story of redemption. I'm so grateful that God stepped in and you have surrendered your life to him. So it's been powerful. Great story. Thanks so much for being here.
Well, thanks for having me on, Bill. Thanks for having me on, George. I appreciate it big time.
All right. That, of course, wraps up yet another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. We're so glad you're with us tonight. If you think this would be a great message for a friend or relative to hear, you can always go to myfaithradio.com. Check out the Real Recovery page. See the old picture of George and I. And then feel free to send this on to a friend or loved one. See you next week. And so I have
have to say before I go.
Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.